Hello, everyone. We're here. I'm alive. We're all alive. It is episode 377 of NWR Connectivity. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan. I think we still do a podcast here. It's been, I don't know, this is my debut in August. We had an episode up, and then it was hard to access the RSS feed or the XML feed. It'd be help if I called it the right feed. Are your internet troubles fixed now? Do we have any more shit to worry about?
Like, they're at least fixed enough. I never did see the guys show up and like do work on the stuff outside, but like it seems to be working. So they may have just showed up while I was at work and I didn't catch them. But like, I think we're good.
Yeah, it's just believe. We'll all believe.
It has been since the game club that you and I have arrived at an episode at the same time.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, outside of the game club, I think it's been like, what, a month and a half?
Yeah, well, and Alex commented when we were recording last week that he has only talked to either me or you. Like, because he was on an episode with me, he wasn't on the game club, and then he was on an episode with you, and then he was on an episode with me. Like,
yep.
So, yeah, but hey, we're here at the same time.
Yeah,
we are recording it's on a different miracle day. Maybe that helps.
We have a nice topic of not talking about Nintendo games for the most part. I bought a PlayStation 5 in the past few days, so I've got a lot of hot takes about the latest and greatest from Sony. Or I guess it's... How was that system almost 3 years old?
I was about to make a joke about the latest and greatest from Sony being an oxymoron, but...
I mean, it's also, I think, I mean, part of the reason why I got it is last week's episode's title, an entire basically running time, Baldur's Gate 3 is coming to PlayStation 5 next month, and I'm going to be playing the crap out of that game on a PS5. And also, Sony dropped the price $50 because they are apparently releasing what is rumored to be a PlayStation 5 Slim that like a leak last week, it's like an inch smaller.
Yeah, Slim is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that. I don't know if Slim's actually what they're calling it, to be fair, but like they showed the pictures and I'm looking at it, is that smaller? Like the shell is a slightly different shape, but like, is it any smaller? It kind of looks the same.
I really wanted to hold out for them to just put out like a less ugly looking console that was smaller, and when I heard the Slim was like an inch smaller, I was like, okay, I'm just gonna get the one that's $50 off right now,
and it's not less ugly.
Yeah, and like, it's still that weird,
it's
design
still ugly.
I mean, right now I have it's taking up like a sizable portion of my TV stand in my office on its side, but like, you know, easy to access. I'm likely never going to move it. It's fine. I still think it's standing up. It looks abhorrent. It's fine where it is.
I hate the look of that thing so much.
Yeah. Now I don't really need to think about it. I have a USB cable connected to it to charge my controller. I do have some disc copies of games, so I have to interact with that. It is weird that the disc drive is just like nestled underneath the weird zipper collar thing.
It's also backwards.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that yet? Like it goes, like the shiny side of the disc goes out.
Yeah.
Sony's been making these things for decades. I don't know what happened, but they forgot put a disc drive on it.
Yeah, that was the cool part as far as, you know, Sony making these things for decades. The one game that I have finished on PlayStation 5 is Astro's Playroom, the pack-in game.
Yeah.
That game's a freaking masterpiece.
Those like, guys, the Astro games are like Sony's best games, and I wish that like they would release them with like a budget. And like,
I was blown away by the criticism of Astro's Playroom, where people are like, oh, I don't know, it feels like a pack-in game, and I'm like, bro, it is
a pack-in.
Like,
what?
Like, I definitely would have to say if like they released this for $70. I have some words about it. It's still a very cool game, but like it is, you know, I did not get every trophy, but I found every collectible, beat every level in 100% of it in 3 hours.
Yeah,
like it's not that long of a game. It's very, very fun, though. It's a like super creative platformer that shows off a lot of stuff that no one else on the system will ever use. I read that after playing a couple hours of Spider-Man Miles Morales, that the haptic triggers on like the trigger parts of the controller that was used in that game. And I was like, was it? And then I did play it. I was like, okay, it is. I didn't notice. But
yeah,
I guess apparently some things do use some of those benefits. I think actually the implementation of the weird touchscreen thing has been better. It feels like people actually know like how to actually use that well after having it on be on the PS4 for, you know, a decade.
The only time I remember actually kind of liking it on the PS4 was when No Man's Sky came out. It used that as a cursor to navigate your inventory.
Cursor.
I'm like, that works. Like that's how it should be used. That's the only game I ever played, I think, that actually really used it for anything other than just being a button.
I never played Tearaway on PS4. I would hope that it used that.
I played that on Vita.
Yeah, I adore that game on Vita. Very, very fun game, very creative. I think that developer is also dead. Although I will say Asobi, the team that made Astro's Playroom, they are alive.
Wasn't Tearaway the same guys that did Little Big Planet?
Yeah, I think Tearaway was
Tangent.
I believe the guy who directed Tearaway left whatever developer. It was Media Molecule. Okay, so they're still around, I think. But I forgot, I got a Rex Crowley is the dude who was like trotted out as the director. I know what did he go on to work on? Knights and Bikes. Also apparently worked on Return to Monkey Island.
Oh, I should play that.
But Knights and Bikes is really cool. I reviewed that on Switch. But that was the guy who made Tearaway, worked on that next. It's a very cute co-op game with good visuals, which that would make sense if you played Tearaway. One of the really cool things about Astro's Playroom, and this is kind of how I sum up my thoughts on it, is that it made me super nostalgic for a series of consoles I don't really care for. It was legitimately a delight to like go, because they have it, the contrivance for Astro's Playroom is you are like going into the PlayStation 5 or whatever as Astro. And there are four different areas that it's like the GPU jungle and the SSD speedway or something like that. So there's kind of a loose theme, like there is like a jungle area, like a racing area, an area where there's a lot of rain. But they're all modeled after parts of the PS5, like the fact like, oh, the SSD, we're living in the future, fellas. But each of those four worlds are also have references to PlayStation 1, 2, 3, and 4. And in those worlds, you find artifacts that are accessories and controllers from each era. So it was very funny. I think one of my favorites was PSP Go, where that shows up. You have a button where you can like interact with the flip thing, or like how like it extends out. And for people who don't remember the PSP Go, it like honestly looks like a like 2008 cell phone, like a, you know, like a Sidekick or something like that.
Yeah, it kind of like slides up.
Yeah, it was a PSP that was digital only. I did like that the copy that came up when you collected this artifact was no UMD OMG, which is a good example of how this game routinely just takes the piss out of PlayStation.
Yeah,
maybe that's why it's endearing to me, is that it seems like it's lightly making fun of some of the things that like didn't really like last. Like there's also puzzle pieces that you collect, and you like have these puzzles that are kind of like graffiti looking art that, you know, focus on PS1, 2, 3, and 4. And I like that one area of it just says Vita means life, which I think was a thing that was actually said in marketing, but then quickly just became something that the internet made fun of it for, because then Sony quickly took the Vita out back and shot it. So Vita did not mean life. Sony gave up like 2 days after it came out, it seemed.
2 days after it came out, 1 day after I bought mine. Yeah.
Yeah. Vita's a good system, though.
It was a great... Oh,
nice little fella.
the Switch is everything that I hoped the Vita would be.
Yeah.
Like, it's nice to see
like
that
actual
work.
Support from the platform holder.
Yeah.
And not just like, there got to be a point with the Vita where it was like, it's just like Atlas games. That's it.
Yeah. My brain apparently never connected Asobo to like any other games they made.
Are you looking at the right Asobi?
Asobi. I looked up the wrong studio. Hey, Asobo is great.
I mean, Asobi is, I know its origins are with Japan Studio, which Japan Studio does not exist anymore. That was like shut down right after PlayStation 5 launched, and Sony was just like, guess what? No more Japanese games. It'll all be sad dad shit from here on out.
Yeah, that was the day PlayStation died for me, I think.
Yeah, let's just mourn the loss of, what was the last games to come out of Japan Studio, just to be sad about it. This is confusing, because I guess they assisted with some games. Patapon 2.
There you go.
Yeah, Asobi. Project Siren, who made Gravity Rush, and the game Siren.
Well, that's a good game.
Yeah. Yeah, that was... I never played Gravity Rush 2, and I think I have it downloaded on my PlayStation 5 now. It was a PS4 release of it.
Yeah, well, Gravity Rush was another one of those great PlayStation Vita games.
Yeah, yeah, excellent game. But yeah, Japan Studio is dead, but Asobi is still around as a part of Sony, and they have not put out a game since Astro's Playroom. So, fingers crossed, maybe we'll see something soon, but knowing my luck with this, they're probably making a PSVR 2 exclusive.
Yeah, I like Astrobot Rescue Mission, their PSVR game, it makes great use of the VR, but it would totally be possible to port that game to a non-VR platform. And it is honestly like one of the better 3D platformers I've played in the last like 10 years. Like it deserves to be in a format where people can actually play it.
Yeah.
It's very good. And it's like a full length game.
Yeah. Just, I hope Asobi makes more games, because Astro's Playroom is very, very special. Something that like, it's a game that I could see myself just replaying. There's some speed run stuff in it. That, I don't know, that kind of doesn't make me as excited to go back to it, especially because part of the gimmick is each world is split into four levels. Two of those levels are just, you know, 3D platforming. And then there is a mechanic for each world. One of them is you're a monkey who's then rock climbing, which actually reminded me that like that functions very similar to the weird amount of rock climbing games that came out on Wii during a certain era. Like I think there was mm-hmm. Rock and Roll Climber, which is Eternal. Rock and Roll Climber rocks. I think that's a Vitae game, I think, WiiWare game, where you use the Wii remote to do some rock climbing, and then at the end you shred on a guitar. It's just, what a game.
That is a Vitae game, yeah.
Hell yeah. Way to go, Giles. So you're a monkey, and you are pressing buttons and like turning the controller left and right to like move your hand up to get to the next foothold. That was pretty solid. There's one where you're rolling a ball using the little touchscreen thing. That is not solid. I do not like that. That was not fun. There's another one where you're using the haptic triggers to control a spaceship, which was pretty cool. Where like, so each trigger is like the left trigger is the left rocket and the right rocket, and the right trigger is the right rocket. And like the haptic stuff, it's definitely like overboard on that, but it's pretty neat. There's also another one where it's you're tilting the controller and using the triggers to bounce a frog around. It's cute uses of the controller. It is just funny playing this because I know when this game came out, what happens in the next 3 years, which is no one's talking about any of these parts of the controller anymore. Yep. Everybody's just, can this Sony published game come to PC eventually? It's one of those things where I appreciate, yeah, it will, like that's the answer. And so they're never going to make a game that, you know, dominantly relies on the cool parts of the PS5 controller or the DualSense or whatever the fuck it's called,
right?
So it's kind of limiting. Like that's the one thing with Nintendo is that I there was a discussion on the Nintendo World Report Discord. You should join it if you haven't, so that way you can have John and I just berate you for having incorrect takes about Star Fox Zero.
That does often happen.
Weirdly,
the problem is people tag me in it whenever they say incorrect. So then I just show up.
Yep. But Star Fox Zero came up, and I think it was James Jones made the point about how, like, it's weird because you usually see those kind of games that, like, brute force using the gimmick of the system in, like, the first year.
Yeah.
Star Fox Zero came out in, like, the year four of the Wii U's life. And, I mean, we know a little bit of the context, where it was basically, like, they're like, Miyamoto went back to the drawing board and was like, I will find out the way to get people to play this fucking gamepad. It's going to be a giant robot.
And everyone loved it.
Yeah, and Star Fox Guard, and you're going to use this controller, and it's going to be like VR, but you got a gamepad in your hand. It's going to be great. And it was. I loved it. It was a lot of fun. But it is, like, I like that Nintendo actually kind of keeps up with the gimmick throughout a console's life, even if it is something like the Switch, where it becomes, you know, more minimized than just the Switch's gimmick. I mean, it's not like HD Rumble's being used all the time anymore, but just the idea of, like, there's a WarioWare game coming out this year, and, like, year 25 of the Switch, or however long it's lasting at this point.
Right.
There's a WarioWare game that just uses the Joy-Con. We had Switch Sports come out last year that just uses the Joy-Con. It turns out that most of the ways that they're doing this is just using a single Joy-Con. but it is, like, at least Nintendo still has that eye towards, like, we're not making a game to future-proof it, which, I don't know, maybe there's that part of me that wishes that they would, because then we wouldn't have all these DS and 3DS games and Wii games that are basically just, like, dead, because it would be too much effort to bring all of them back.
Yeah. I guess one final note about Asobi. Apparently, when Japan Studio shut down, like, Sony just took everybody that was still there and repurposed them into Asobi because of how positively received Astro's Playroom was.
Good.
I guess they've really bulked up that studio. So hopefully that means that, like, their next thing will be more of, like, a real, because the only, like, they did the Playroom, which I don't know if anybody did that on PS4. But that's where, like, the Astrobot stuff came from.
Yeah.
And then
was that
they did
stuff in the controller? Yeah. Okay. I do remember
and then
that.
They did a VR.
I got a PS4 a couple months after launch. I got it pretty early.
Yeah. It was, the Playroom stuff was like a free, it was like Astro's Playroom.
Yeah.
Like, it was.
Yeah. Not as good.
So Astrobot Rescue Mission. Astrobot Rescue Mission is, I think, the only thing they've released where it was, like, physically printed on a disc. Hopefully their next thing is
they should do that again.
They've literally only released great unknown things.
Yeah. And you gotta think, I mean, COVID might have impacted some of their work. Like,
they were on a pretty steady clip of a game every 2 years since, like, 2013. They were just tiny little games.
Yeah. So maybe we'll see something more full fledged from them in the next year or two. I would be super down for that.
Yeah.
So my other PlayStation 5 journey so far, I did get it was still $50 off. So I essentially, or I guess I could view it as I bought a PlayStation 5 at regular price and got Final Fantasy 16 for $10 because I got that bundle. So I've been playing Final Fantasy 16, which I have heard enough of how, like, the story in particular just, like, dive bombs as the game goes on. It starts really strong, though. And I don't know if you should go out of your way to play this game, John, but I think if, you know, it's on PC and you have a PC that can run it effectively, or it does come to Xbox, which I think that might happen.
We'll see. Like, I mean, the Final Fantasy 14 is coming to Xbox suspiciously exactly 10 years after it came out on PS3.
Yeah.
And I loved seeing people's reaction of being like, there was no exclusive agreement. Like, okay.
Yeah.
They just waited for 10 years exactly. That's okay. Totally normal.
and I know, well, because I know Final Fantasy 16, I think it has a 6-month exclusivity on, I think the earliest it could come out on PC is December, which I seem to recall is something from a producer where they're like, we're not going to have the port done yet. But, like, especially with that recent, where was, oh, that was at the Final Fantasy 14 Fan Fest or whatever in Vegas a couple weeks ago. But especially with like Microsoft and Square Enix having this, like, we're actually going to work together more, like, that big to do. And looking at how, like, Final Fantasy 16, I think, met expectations, but did not meet unrealistic expectations that shareholders and people had. It would not surprise me if Final Fantasy 16 is on Xbox, like, holiday 2024 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes,
not a guarantee. I don't know what was signed with it. Who knows?
They've made so much effort to make that game not look like a JRPG that it kind of makes sense that they would do that in order to sell it to a system that historically doesn't do well with JRPGs.
Yeah. Like, yeah, and I say that as I've played this game, I'm a couple hours into it. I think the like, people have been like, "Oh, it's like a Game of Thrones story." Like, it's like the dumbest, like, as someone who watched all of Game of Thrones, and that last season is woof. Like, Final Fantasy 16 in its Game of Thrones-ness is not peak Game of Thrones.
It is, sure,
maybe on par with the shittiest parts of Game of Thrones, at least so far. Like, it's not bad. There are definitely characters that I like. I think the lead guy, Clive, is you know, compelling enough. Good voice performances across the board that I've seen. But, like, the world does have a vibe, and I think it helps out a lot. They still have shit like chocobos and moogles.
Sure.
Because it does look more serious, but I think, like, that edge of, like, there's a little flying teddy bear thing. And here's a colorful bird. And you also have that dog, Torgel, who, that the hype is real. That dog rules. helps you out in battle and stuff. But then the combat, it's just a platinum game.
It's the Devil May Cry combat director, right? So yeah
they got the I know he definitely worked on Matt Walker's Devil May Cry 5. I don't know how what his history is before that, but I mean, Devil May Cry 5, very good video game.
Oh, sure.
And, like, I mean, the combat in this game, I didn't think the combat was going to be the part of the game that I was like, this is clearly the best part of this video game. But it's really good.
Can see, like, if you were somebody who really likes traditional Final Fantasy, it feels like they're kind of done with you.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, I mean,
that series is just has no interest. They have been
doing that for a long time. What was the last, like, I guess 13? And everybody hated that, so...
Well, they... Yeah, because, like, 10's pretty traditional. They got to... They did 12, and were like, what if we made it good instead? And then everyone was like, don't do that anymore, and so they stopped. 15, the combat was the only part I liked.
15, I tried playing... I played, like, some of the demos and stuff, and I wasn't really into it.
None of those demos have anything to do with what's in the game. So
this is weird, but it's also like then reading reviews and stuff, like I wasn't into that, like, I don't know, you're just driving around with four dudes in a car for most of the game. But after Final Fantasy VII Remake, I wound up playing through the majority of 15, and I think it was more that I was going from Final Fantasy VII Remake, which that is also a combat system that I think absolutely rocks, and 15 is definitely, like, in the same ballpark as that. I just like 7 Remake's combat more. 15's combat's fine.
15's combat reminded me of the combat in The Last Story, where it was less about individual button presses and more about just sort of running at the enemies. And then triggering special things. I don't know.
I lent a handful of Switch games to a friend of mine. And he played Xenoblade 1. And was like, oh, this game rocks. And I was like, skip 2, just play 3. But then he went from Xenoblade 1 to Final Fantasy 12, and he was like, this is just like Xenoblade, but worse. And I was like, I mean, like, it came out 6 years before it.
Right.
There's definitely a lot of connective tissue there, maybe not directly by like the teams involved. And like, it was the kind of thing where I'm like, I can't even fight you on that, because that's kind of what that game is.
It's why. So I just before Pikmin 4 came out, I was actually, I'm like probably 10 hours into a playthrough of the remaster of Final Fantasy 12, because I played it on PS2. I hadn't really messed with the remaster much. I think that's my favorite Final Fantasy game.
The same.
That game is so good.
I did like, a little bit on PS2. I still have not played that much of the remaster.
Remaster actually playing that, because it was, yeah, playing that kind of shortly after we did our Twilight Princess game club, I was like, okay, this is how I want Twilight Princess to have been remastered. Like, it's still subtle, but they did a really nice job of like actually replacing assets and making it look really nice. Final Fantasy 12, that game's incredible. And if you make Vash a cleric or a healer or whatever at the beginning of the game, it makes the game so easy, because he can just heal from the before you even get a healer in your party, just nothing can kill you, and it makes grinding super easy.
Back to Final Fantasy 16. Like that mainline Final Fantasy series, it's now an action series now.
Yeah,
and I don't know if it's a bad thing, like, because I do. There is a vibe of this that does not feel out of line with, you know, my historical, you know, experiences with Final Fantasy, like, especially the way that the series has evolved over the past 40 years. This doesn't feel like it's, you know, oh, they took a left turn. Like, I mean, they took a left turn like 15, 20 years ago, and they've just kept on going in that direction. At a certain point, this is just the way the series is going. Oh man, it's so cool when like you're just in a town and you're like, oh, that's a familiar Final Fantasy melody worked into this song. It seems, I've not listened to the soundtrack outside of the game, but it seems like it's a pretty killer soundtrack.
Yeah.
I don't know who the composer is, but I'll definitely keep them on my radar after this, because it's been good work so far.
Oh, the name of the composer is in Japanese and I don't speak that.
Masayoshi Soken.
I don't immediately recognize that name.
Let's see, what else have they done? Final Fantasy 14. Oh, that makes sense. Oh, here's relevant to this podcast, Mario Sports Mix. And Mario Hoops 3-on-3.
I often felt that those were the greatest soundtracks of the Mario Sports anthology.
Honestly, they're pretty good soundtracks.
I don't remember a single song off of any Mario Sports game, but
sure. Mario Sports Mix, when I also uncovered with getting a PlayStation 5, my local library has a ton of PlayStation 5 games that I can put on hold. I picked up God of War, Ragnarok. I have Jedi Survivor on hold. I think there's a person before me, so it might be a little while. But I did see that they also had Mario Sports Mix on Wii, which I kind of want to take out just to say that I did.
Yeah.
I mean, I already am prepping for the game club where I took out New Super Mario Brothers DS, a game that I definitely own, but it's packed up somewhere. It just seemed easier to walk down the street to my local library to pick up a copy of New Super Mario Brothers DS as opposed to going into my basement.
Yeah, I suppose I should come up with a way to play that game. I did first Mario World and Mario Land. Then I move on to the new games.
What else with my PlayStation 5. I'm also playing Spider-Man Miles Morales. That game is great. It reminds me of how I think that the first Spider-Man PS4 game is fine. And this being a more concentrated hit of dopamine with it, I like a lot.
That makes sense. Like, I haven't played Miles Morales, but the first Spider-Man I started playing, I'm like, this is really cool. And then it kind of just kept being like the exact same, like, 15 minute gameplay loop for like a really long time, and I just stopped.
Yeah, that's so, what like I
a
think
more
the
focused
story,
version of that makes sense. That would work better.
I think I'll probably be done the story in like 10 hours, and then I might wind up just doing some of the cleanup for 100%, because it seems like it's pretty doable. Mm-hmm. But it is, I mean, it's, I also like Miles Morales. Like, it's the Spider-Verse
right,
of it all.
Right, he's a good character. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, really, the way that they worked, like, it hits those good spots. Like, it's a well-told comic book story. Still pretty early on it. Hopefully it doesn't, you know, fall apart. But from everything I've heard, it's fine. Makes me very excited for Spider-Man 2 this year. Although that game, I was reading about that game today, and I'm like, this looks like it's going to be very bloated.
Yeah.
Which I just, why does every game need to be 150 hours? Like, I just want like a fun 15, 20 hour Spider-Man game. That's all I want.
Because it's a Sony game and it absolutely must be a blockbuster or everyone is fired. That is how they operate.
But yeah, it's just got a very, very good feel. Spider-Man Miles Morales. And once again, good VO. I do like that Troy Baker's punchable voice is voicing a scummy corporate exec.
He does have a punchable voice.
It is a very punchable voice.
Does he try to like sell you any NFTs in the game?
Or? No. It is an energy source that is giving people cancer or something.
That, I mean, so like an NFT.
Yeah, pretty much. Instead of taking your money, it takes your life.
That might, one of my favorite moments in the history of Twitter or X or whatever, might have been the hot 30 minutes where Troy Baker decided he was selling NFTs before literally everyone was like, Troy, no. And he was like, what?
Another Troy Baker thing that I will, it is etched in my brain. Not even like, I guess, you know, we're talking about PlayStation 5. Here's a thing that people probably know about me, but I try not to talk about it because I'm gonna let people like things. I don't like the Last of Us games.
Yeah. Like, no, just embrace it. It's dunk on Last of Us time. They're bad and you should feel bad for liking
them. Last of Us Part 2, when it came out, I forget, was it Jason Schreier like enjoyed the game but like had some kind of snarky like, oh, why'd they make all these people crunch comment? Like, I forget exactly what he said, but it was basically like he did not 10 out of 10 love the game. He liked 8 out of 10 like love the game or something like that. And Troy Baker just like quote tweeted him or quote posted him or whatever it is now. And just like put up the thing, like the whole thing about the man in the arena, about how like, oh, like the people outside of the arena, they don't know. And I'm like, bro, like you are the video game voice actor. Like you have supplanted Nolan North. Like you are a celebrity. Like,
yeah,
you are not the man in the arena. Like,
right.
It is also like him posting that too is also just like Gamergate bait to high hell as well, which is like awareness, bro. I hope to God he is not fully in that direction, but he's definitely has to suspect things.
I get this impression a lot from the voice acting side of video games, and this is not a bash at all, but I think the voice acting talent in a game has a very different experience making a game than the guy doing texture mapping. The guys doing the grunt work of actually programming the game, like those guys have, like as far as like crunch and stuff of like what was actually being talked about in that story, like what you experienced as a voice actor, like I'm sure you worked very hard.
He did do mocap, giving credit where credit's due.
But like, how much overtime were you working as a voice actor, as a union voice actor? You know, the actual people like programming the game were not union and are consistently taken advantage of. Whereas you had like regulated breaks and were off by a certain time every day.
Spider-Man Miles Morales, great game.
Really
enjoying it. I also got I have not played them yet. I got the Ratchet and Clank and the Sackboy game. I haven't played a Ratchet and Clank in a really long time. I heard Ratchet and Clank rules. The Sackboy game is apparently like Super Mario 3D World, but made by Sumo Digital.
That I meant, because that one came out on PS4 as well. And PC. And I always meant to pick that up at some point. I'm not a huge fan of the Little Big Planet games. I really like their humor and I like their vibe. I just think they play like crap. I was very curious about the one that was a 3D platformer that I've already lost the name of.
Sackboy's Biggest. I literally bought the game last week, and I
keep wanting to call it Sackboy World.
Yeah, I think it's Sackboy's Big Adventure.
Called. Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious about that, but I haven't got around to playing it yet.
Yeah. Sackboy. It is called Sackboy : A Big Adventure.
Great name.
That's not a good name.
Why? I feel like you should keep the Little Big Planet branding.
I think they didn't because it's not the 2D platformer.
I suppose. We didn't call Mario 64 like Plumber.
It's true.
We kept the Mario branding.
But yeah, and I mean, yeah, you could have just called it Little Big Planet 3D or something.
Yeah.
And also there wasn't any content creation stuff like in like Little Big Planet.
Oh, sure.
Which maybe, I don't know.
Is that why people played those?
I think initially, yes.
Okay.
I never really, I was in the same boat as you, where I think they had some clever elements, but I didn't really like the way they handled.
Yep. They were a great 2D platformer, assuming you were looking for a 2D platformer on a PlayStation.
Yeah, yeah. And yep. Indies hadn't, like, at that time.
Right, PS3 era PlayStation.
Yeah. Indies had not taken over the world yet, made it, or at least in sheer numbers, they had not taken over platforms yet.
Oh yeah, PS3 360 era was like, there was like a token indie game every year.
Well, that was the stuff where I think Microsoft had like, you needed to like get a publisher to give you a slot or something.
People were weird. You could publish on the Nintendo, but your game had to be like under a kilobyte, had to fit on a floppy disk for it to be on the Wii store. I remember that being the problem for, I think it was Super Meat Boy. Yep. Yeah, they couldn't fit the game on the Wii shop.
Yeah, and they tried to be like, listen, like, we're a big deal. And like Reggie was like, no can do'sville, baby doll.
Yeah.
Or at least I think that's how the story is goes.
I believe that was a direct quote. It's in Reggie's book.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I told the Super Meat Boy guys, fuck off.
Yep.
He
allowed them to succeed in other platforms, and he himself is personally responsible for all of the success of Super Meat Boy, I believe, probably how he would describe that encounter.
Yep. Yeah, he would probably, he definitely set it off. It's like how Operation Rainfall led to Xenoblade being a big deal, so good job, Reggie.
Thanks, Reggie. So much gaslighting in Reggie's book.
PlayStation 5 also has a really good interface. I kind of like, you hate to see it, like it's that like the onion thing of like the person you hate the most made a good point or whatever. I have long said when it comes to like the way stores and stuff are integrated on consoles that every single one sucks. I think the only, if having explored this and like legitimately like went into this cold, I've like seen like pictures of the PS5 interface. I have not like read up on it at all. Other than like, I have heard that people don't totally hate it. The only critique that I have is it was difficult to find the games that I already owned. But that was because it wasn't located in the store. It was relocated in my game library, which are two different places. Because I do have, because, you know, I had a PS4 and, you know, stuff like that. So it is kind of cool that, like, I just have a bunch of games that I had for a while ago. Once I resubscribed to PlayStation Plus, because I need that for online multiplayer for Baldur's Gate 3. I have all these games from the PS4 era that I had from PS Plus that I have access to. Am I going to play any of them? Probably not.
Did you subscribe to, like, the PlayStation Double Plus Good, whatever it's called?
I legitimately do not know what the names of everything are.
Me neither. Double Plus Good was not a joke. I just don't know.
Yeah, I think it's Premium, Extra, and I don't know. There are three tiers. This is when I looked into it, because I was like, oh, I need this for online multiplayer. Initially, I was like, well, I have these couple games that I bought. I'm just going to play them. And then it was like, okay, might as well do PS Plus, because it does also, like, you know, like the Demon's Souls remake is there, that Returnal, like stuff like that, like games that I have heard that people love that I don't think are going to be for me, but it would be cool to try them. like the Demon Souls remake, like I'm not that big into Souls games, but like I'll definitely take that for a spin. People really like it. Returnal, I don't know if that's totally going to be for me, but I'll try it out. Even a Sad Dad game. Which one? You'll never know. God of War Ragnarok is one that I'll probably take for a spin. Although that's not a PS Plus, that's because I got that one out of the library. Even Death Stranding, maybe I'll play that a little bit. But on the store, they actually have a very good way of being like, here are your three options, and here's the benefits, and like what each thing has. So the base one is just like, you know, online multiplayer and the monthly games. Then the next tier up is their Game Pass equivalent. The one beyond that is, you know, PlayStation Classics. So it's a bunch of like PS1 and PS2 games that you have access to, and then all of the cloud streaming stuff. So I still think it's confusing. And I looked through the list of like PS1 and PS2 games, and like, I do not give a shit. I guess it's cool that Rogue Galaxy is there.
They have Toy Story 2 for the PS1, Neil. That is the best game currently available on PS5. Fight me.
And also, from when, I don't know if there was a bundle or something, but like they have a bunch of Star Wars games, but I also own a bunch of Star Wars games from that. Like I have Star Wars Bounty Hunter, Jedi Starfighter, Racer Revenge, and Super Star Wars are already in my catalog. They are all installed on my PS5 right now. So I can play Racer Revenge on.
Yeah, those in, all like they 8K. Did this. There was like a glorious like month where like they released all those on PlayStation and made them all backwards compatible on Xbox. Like they just went through and updated every old Star Wars game, and it was glorious.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm happy to have them there. So I wound up like it's $60 for the year for vanilla PS Plus. And I think it's $80 for the year. So only $20 more per year, you know, break that down $1.50 per month or whatever, to do their Game Pass equivalent. So I just did that for a year. I think the only game I'm going to play online is Baldur's Gate 3. So there might be a world where this time next year, I'm like, no, I'm not going to re-up on PS Plus. I mean, it depends on what I'm playing, but like use this year to kind of catch up on the PlayStation games that I've missed. You know, noodle around with stuff and then go from there.
Yeah, you will with that end Game Pass, and presumably you'll buy it on Switch. You will have three different ways to play Sea of Stars.
Yeah, no, it's weird.
So that's exciting.
Well, I already backed it, so I have a Switch code coming.
All right.
Now I can just.
Did they send you like a Steam version too? Like, are you up to four different ways to play?
I should just get it on Steam now. That'll be the version I actually pay for.
Complete the collection.
It has got me to the point where it's kind of hard to justify having this PS Plus and Game Pass. My wife is using Game Pass, and I'm definitely gonna noodle around with Starfield. And the PS5 store interface, it's just like easy to use. Like, things are in the right place. You can like click into a game and not like immediately lose your place. Like it's the thing that bugs me so much on Switch is the wish list. I'm still like just actively pissed off about that. I will put a game bad on my wish list because it is my way of just like, you know, I want to see if like this game that I've been keeping an eye on goes on sale. And then if I actually like put a game on it and I buy the game, then I have to manually remove it from the wish list. Like,
yes,
come on. What are we doing, fellas?
Yeah, I feel like I have a monthly ritual of just going to clean the wish list.
Yep.
Because it honestly, like, I mean, yeah, you talk about like none of them do the store quite right. It's like Xboxes and PlayStations, at least like my experience with PlayStation is PS4 one. But like theirs are both fine. Nintendo's is horrible.
Yeah. I mean, I thought the PS4 interface, even though I mean, PS5 is definitely the same. Like it's the same format. I just think the PS5, like it's more elegant. I did not love interacting with the PS4 store. And Xbox, and I mean, it does help when you don't have a little potato console that's 10 years old and a handheld that is loading up a website when it loads up its store. That does help a lot. Having these SSDs, the way these consoles are more powerful, like it does make it easier to make these store experiences better. Mm-hmm. But like, good Lord, can this Switch successor that's, you know, coming next year or whatever, can it just have a functional store on the console, or at least one with personality? Like the Wii U store wasn't great, but at least it had music.
Does the PS4 store have music?
The PS5, I mean. The PS5 has like an undercurrent hum that I do enjoy, and it makes me long for the days when Nintendo consoles had music.
Yep. Yeah, the Xbox is bad. Disappointingly quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, like props to Sony. Their console has a soundtrack.
Yeah.
It's like it's still that like ethereal bullshit, but it better than nothing.
Well, I remember on PS4, you could swap out the themes and that would swap out your music. So like my PS4 just makes No Man's Sky sounds whenever it's
turned on. Oh shit. I don't know. I'll have to see if this has themes. I don't know if it does.
I assume it does.
I do.
Xbox has themes. So if PlayStation 5 doesn't have themes, then Xbox is objectively better.
Does PS5 have themes? Like PS4? Yes. All right. No. Oh, you motherfucker.
Oh, no. Well, that's right. That console war settled, I guess. Yeah, it's over. Xbox is the only one. When I turn on my Xbox, like Master Chief is in the background and there's like lasers flying all over the place. It's pretty cool.
I will say, and this does point it out and some of the search stuff, is that like when you go over a game, there is like a you know, musical flourish from the game and the background changes to be something from that game, which is kind of nice.
Xbox does that now. The most recent Xbox interface makes it so it replaces your background with whatever game you hover over. So right now I hover over Starfield. And then I get sad that it's not here yet.
Oh my God, that's like 3 weeks away.
Yeah, I need to get through Baldur's Gate fast.
This is a hell of a year of video games. We're going to keep on talking about that because there's still a lot of games left. And if you were to be like the year is over right now, I'd be like, okay, that was a fine year of video games.
Oh, just like the next. Well, and especially if you're playing Baldur's Gate on console, like,
yeah.
Next month is stupid. Like, and I keep hearing people be like, oh, like Starfield or Baldur's Gate. And I'm like, dude, like, just enjoy that there are two giant high budget Western RPGs coming out at the same time.
Like, I'm not even done Zelda. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I still need to do Pikmin and there's all kind of, yeah, I'm.
Yeah.
I'm very,
Pikmin
very
4,
behind.
Pikmin 4, at least I could be like, well, I rolled credits. Even if it's like that game rolls credits at a weird time, and when the initial wave of reviews came out and people acted like that was post game, like, no, that is just the game.
Like, right.
I know you have not gotten there yet, but you roll credits and like it is very much like they're like, baby, we're just getting started. It feels like a direct salvo from Nintendo to be like, you know how people don't finish games? What if we just put the credits halfway through the game instead?
Well, they had a phase, Mario 3D Land is the one I always think of, where the credits are literally at the halfway point in the game.
Yep. I feel like it's come up a couple times, or at least like where credits get rolled earlier.
3D World did the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Lost Levels might have started that.
But yeah, Pikmin 4 rules. Like, I mean, Super Mega Baseball 4 is also incredible. I'm looking forward to likely getting Madden on PS5 when it comes out, and being mad that it's bad, but still probably putting 200 hours into it.
Does Madden have crossplay?
I don't think so.
Okay. I didn't know if like Madden was one where you played with like other friends or anything.
I do not. No, Madden. Okay. Madden is. I am making my single player RPG out of football. Okay. I don't think I've played online in Madden since I reviewed them.
You know, I guess that makes it like three massive Western RPGs coming out.
Yeah,
I didn't think to include Madden.
I mean, I've got like this is where like the world is my oyster, because the Packers, you know, moved on from Aaron Rodgers. We just have all these young people. You know, it's a good way to start a Madden franchise, playing with a team with a lot of young talent.
Yeah.
because that is what I'm gonna do. That is why, like, usually there are some years where I'm like, I can wait. Like, no, I need to play as the 2023 Green Bay Packers as soon as I possibly can to have them win the Super Bowl, which they likely won't do this year, in the first season together.
Man, it's crazy that there is a PlayStation developed baseball game, multiple years of a PlayStation developed baseball game on Switch, and yet no Madden.
It's baffling.
It's so weird.
Makes me angry.
Yeah,
because I would play infinite Madden on. I played a lot of Madden on Steam Deck, and Madden on PC last year, like, horrifically broken. Like,
Madden on it's so weird.
It's
they
so
just
bad.
Don't care, or like there hate is, it, or I don't know.
So there is a bug with, like, in. So I typically play franchise mode, and this was something that I ran into playing it on PC last year. That there is a bug that when you play it on franchise mode, there is a setting where it's basically like it carries over how how tired your players are from game to game. You know, men's in the past, it used to be like, oh, like a guy might like go out for a play or two, but the start of the next game, he'd be at 100%. Whereas this one, like if a, you know, running back ran for 300 yards or whatever, the next game he would be very tired. There was a bug in this where basically if you played a season, you would get to week 12 and every starter would be like completely gassed. So like I was playing this and I'm like, why is just every starting player on my team taking a playoff? Why are they not coming back in? And it's because like they were just triggered where they're like, oh no, they can't possibly play. They're so tired. and it just basically ruins your franchise. There's nothing you can do about it in the moment. What a bad game. I think that's all I got to say on PS5 and the greater world of other consoles. It's a good system. I've got that. Now I've got the Trinity of PS5, yes. Series X, and Switch.
You can play everything.
I will not have time. Yeah, but do I have time to play everything? No, I do not.
No, well, especially not once Baldur. I can tell you with confidence that nothing else gets played once Baldur's Gate comes out.
Well, I mean, my limitation with Baldur's Gate is that I am going to be playing it with three other people in a party. But I have already talked to a friend who lives near me that we might do a split screen co-op campaign as well. To tie it back to stuff on NintendoWorldReport.com, I posted a review for Marble It Up Ultra today. At least as we're recording, by the time you hear this a couple days ago, the game will be out though. It's a very good video game, but it has cross play with everything except for PS5.
That's I thought we had solved that problem with Sony.
It's Switch, we Switch PC, and Xbox. It's got cross play with all three of those.
I like when just random things cause, like, that's like Quake 2. If you play the Xbox version, has 8-player split screen. It does not have it on Switch because Switch can't run that many, and it doesn't have it on PS5 because you can't connect that many controllers to a PS5.
Yeah,
which is like, it's like a weird unintentional exclusive feature, but just because of circumstances.
Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode. We do have a listener mail that we'll hit real quick before we wrap up.
Sure.
Adolf Vega says, wife and I haven't finished Secret Invasion yet. We got like 3 episodes in and just don't care. If anyone can be an alien and no way to detect aliens, so what is anything anymore? Wife and I watched last season of Flash and Supergirl, so we know trash, and boy does Secret Wars stink. The MCU needs to end after Avengers Secret Wars. I'm also fine purging out some TV shows like Echo. She was neat, but subtitles mess up the flow of pacing. I'm cool with a deaf superhero, but I'm not sure about an entire show with subtitles in action. Just don't give that much crap about her character. That's the MCU portion, going back to an episode from almost a month ago. And then in response to our 2D Mario Club, Adolf Vega says, I used to love Mario 3 over World, but as I grew older, I grew to love World more. 3 can be very hard for no reason. World is a masterpiece, and the visuals and music are amazing. It's smooth like butter, and flying with the cape is vastly better than the raccoon suit. I just adore the key sound effects. It's like 16-bit THX sound effects. The music for Mario Land 1 is perfect. Look for the remix from the Ambassadors of Funk. Mario Land 1 and 2 are quirky and tight and fun. Land 1 and 2 would be awesome candidates for remastering. Land 2 has some strange settings for a Mario game, but it's cool. Mario's cry in Yoshi's Island is like nails on a chalkboard. I hated it until I played it on GBA because it was so different. I appreciate the game now and love it, but I'm never collecting everything in that game. So keep up the good work, Adolf Vega. MCU, yes. I don't care about the MCU right now. I care about seeing how much it sucks at times. I think I might have said this on the last episode, but like I kept up with recaps of Secret Invasion because I just had to know. Like, I was like, is this actually good? Okay, no, it's not good. Mario 3 over world. Adolf, you're speaking my language. I am Super Mario World is where it's at for me. Although, really, it is Mario Brothers 3 and World are both just excellent. Like, they are 1 and 2 for me.
I do disagree on the cape thing. I think the Tanuki actually, suit is objectively better than the cape.
I'll be real. I do, too.
Okay. nice. That's us reaching across the aisle.
Yeah. The cape is neat. But
yeah.
I think especially the Tanuki suit where you can, turn into the statue. Like, that's cool as shit. I love that.
I like all the cool, the animal suits in 3.
Yeah.
Are just neat.
Yeah, I like World, but, the frog suit and stuff is really fun.
Yeah.
The hammer bro suit. There's a lot of good stuff in 3.
Yeah, I think everything else. The only other thing in this that I disagreed with is that I think the Game Boy Advance version of Yoshi's Island, it makes Mario's cry so much worse. Because now it's a bit crunched cry. And so I think I like that less. But I think the answer there is just that there's no good way to play Yoshi's Island, so just don't.
Exactly.
Yep.
And all right, that's email us any more listener mail to connectivity@nintendoreport.com. We will be back next week at some point to talk about video games. Gamescom is next week, so maybe we'll have something fun to talk about with that. If not, then maybe we will wait to record until after we see Ahsoka. Well, we'll see what happens. Talk to y'all next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye.